Selden looked at Lindor, who shook his head firmly. Not while he's on his shift.
When does your shift begin, Mr. Amaril? Asked Selden.
1600.
Can you see me tomorrow at 1400?
Sure. Where?
Selden turned to Salver. Would you permit me to see him in your place?
De Salver looked very unhappy.
It's not necessary. He's just a heat sinker.
Selden said, He recognized my face. He knows something about me. He can't be just an anything. I'll see him in my room.
And then, as De Salver's face didn't soften, he added, My room, for which rent is being paid. And you'll be at work out of the apartment.
De Salver said in a low voice, It's not me, Master Selden. It's my wife, Cassilia. She won't stand for it.
I'll talk to her, said Selden grimly. She'll have to.
64.
Cassilia de Salver opened her eyes wide.
A heat sinker? Not in my apartment.
Why not? Besides, he'll be coming to my room, said Selden. At 1400.
I won't have it, said Mistress de Salver. This is what comes of going down to the heat sinks. Gerard was a fool.
Not at all, Mistress de Salver. We went at my request, and I was fascinated. I must see this young man, since that is necessary to my scholarly work.
I'm sorry if it is, but I won't have it.
Doris Venabili raised her hand.
Harry, let me take care of this.
Mistress de Salver, if Dr. Selden must see someone in his room this afternoon, the additional person naturally means additional rent. We understand that. For today, then, the rent on Dr. Selden's room will be doubled.
Mistress de Salver thought about it.
Well, that's decent of you, but it's not only the credits. There's the neighbors to think of. A sweaty, smelly heat sinker.
I doubt that he'll be sweaty and smelly at 1400, Mistress de Salver. But let me go on. Since Dr. Selden must see him, then if he can't see him here, he'll have to see him elsewhere. But we can't run here and there. That would be too inconvenient. Therefore, what we will have to do is to get a room elsewhere. It won't be easy, and we don't want to do it, but we will have to. So we will pay the rent through today and leave, and, of course, we will have to explain to Master Hummin why we have had to change the arrangements that he so kindly made for us.
Wait!
Mistress de Salver's face became a study of calculation.
We wouldn't like to disoblige Master Hummin, or you two. How long would this creature have to stay?
He's coming at 1400. He must be at work at 1600. He will be here for less than 2 hours, perhaps considerably less. We will meet him outside, the two of us, and bring him to Dr. Selden's room. Any neighbors who see us will think he is an outworlder friend of ours.
Mistress de Salver nodded her head.
Then let it be as you say. Double rent for Master Selden's room for today, and the heat sinker will visit just this one time.
Just this one time, said Doris.
But later, when Selden and Doris were sitting in her room, Doris said,
Why do you have to see him, Harry? Is interviewing a heat sinker important to psychohistory, too?
Selden thought he detected a small edge of sarcasm in her voice, and he said tartly, I don't have to base everything on this huge project of mine, in which I have very little faith anyway. I am also a human being, with human curiosities. We were down in the heat sinks for hours, and you saw what the working people there were like. They were obviously uneducated. They were low-level individuals, no play on words intended, and yet here was one who recognized me.
He must have seen me on holovision on the occasion of the decennial convention, and he remembered the word psychohistory. He strikes me as unusual, as out of place somehow, and I would like to talk to him. Because it pleases your vanity to have become known even to heat-sinkers in Dahl? Well, perhaps, but it also piques my curiosity. And how do you know he hasn't been briefed and intends to lead you into trouble as has happened before?
Selden winced. I won't let him run his fingers through my hair. In any case, we're more nearly prepared now, aren't we? And I'm sure you'll be with me. I mean, you let me go upper side alone. You let me go with Raindrop 43 to the microfarms alone. And you're not going to do that again, are you?
You can be absolutely sure I won't, said Doors.
Well then, I'll talk to the young man, and you can watch out for traps. I have every faith in you.
65.
Emeril arrived a few minutes before 1400, looking warily about. His hair was neat, and his thick mustache was combed and turned up slightly at the edges. His t-shirt was startlingly white. He did smell, but it was a fruity odor that undoubtedly came from the slightly over-enthusiastic use of scent. He had a bag with him. Selden, who had been waiting outside for him, seized one elbow lightly, while Doris seized the other, and they moved rapidly into the elevator. Having reached the correct level, they passed through the apartment into Selden's room. Emeril said in a low, hangdog voice, "Nobody home, huh?"
"Everyone's busy," said Selden neutrally. He indicated the only chair in the room, a pad directly on the floor.
"No," said Emeril, "I don't need that. One of you two use it."
He squatted on the floor with a graceful downward motion.
Doors imitated the movement, sitting on the edge of Selden's floor-based mattress. But Selden dropped down rather clumsily, having to make use of his hands, and unable quite to find a comfortable position for his legs. Selden said, "Well, young man, why do you want to see me?"
"Because you're a mathematician. You're the first mathematician I ever saw close up. So I could touch him, you know."
"Mathematicians feel like anyone else."
"Not to me, Dr. Selden."
"That's my name."
Emeril looked pleased. "I finally remembered. You see, I want to be a mathematician, too."
"Very good. What's stopping you?"
Emeril suddenly frowned. "Are you serious?"
"I presume something is stopping you. Yes, I'm serious."
"What's stopping me is I'm a Dahlite, a heat-sinker on Dahl. I don't have the money to get an education, and I can't get the credits to get an education. A real education, I mean. All they taught me was to read and cipher and use a computer, and then I knew enough to be a heat-sinker. But I wanted more, so I taught myself."
"In some ways, that's the best kind of teaching. How did you do that?"
"I knew a librarian. She was willing to help me. She was a very nice woman, and she showed me how to use computers for learning mathematics. And she set up a software system that would connect me with other libraries. I'd come on my days off and on mornings after my shift. Sometimes she'd lock me in her private room so I wouldn't be bothered by people coming in, or she would let me in when the library was closed. She didn't know mathematics herself, but she helped me all she could. She was oldish, a widow lady. Maybe she thought of me as a kind of son or something. She didn't have children of her own."
Maybe, thought Selden briefly, there was some other emotion involved too. But he put the thought away. None of his business.
"I liked number theory," said Amaryl. I worked some things out from what I learned from the computer and from the book films it used to teach me mathematics. I came up with some new things that weren't in the book films.
Selden raised his eyebrows. That's interesting. Like what?
I've brought some of them to you. I've never showed them to anyone. The people around me...
He shrugged.
They'd either laugh or be annoyed. Once I tried to tell a girl I knew, but she just said I was weird and wouldn't see me anymore. Is it all right for me to show them to you?
Quite all right, believe me. Selden held out his hand, and after a brief hesitation, Amaryl handed him the bag he was carrying. For a long time, Selden looked over Amaryl's papers. The work was naive in the extreme, but he allowed no smile to cross his face. He followed the demonstrations, not one of which was new, of course, or even nearly new, or of any importance. But that didn't matter. Selden looked up. Did you do all of this yourself? Amaryl, looking more than half frightened, nodded his head. Selden extracted several sheets. What made you think of this? His finger ran down a line of mathematical reasoning. Amaryl looked it over, frowned, and thought about it. Then he explained his line of thinking. Selden listened and said, Did you ever read a book by Annette Bigel?
On number theory?
The title was Mathematical Deduction. It wasn't about number theory particularly. Amaryl shook his head.
I never heard of him. I'm sorry.
He worked out this theorem of yours 300 years ago. Amaryl looked stricken.
I didn't know that.
I'm sure you didn't. You did it more cleverly, though. It's not rigorous, but...
What do you mean, rigorous?
It doesn't matter. Selden put the papers back together in a sheaf, restored it to the bag, and said, Make several copies of all this. Take one copy, have it dated by an official computer, and place it under computerized seal. My friend here, Mistress Vanabili, can get you into Streeling University, without tuition, on some sort of scholarship. You'll have to start at the beginning and take courses in other subjects than mathematics, but... By now, Amaryl had caught his breath.
Into Streeling University? They won't take me.
Why not? Doors, you can arrange it, can't you?
I'm sure I can.
No, you can't, said Amaryl hotly. They won't take me. I'm from Dahl.
Well?
They won't take people from Dahl. Selden looked at Doris. What's he talking about? Doris shook her head.
I really don't know.
Amaryl said, You're an outworlder, mistress. How long have you been at Streeling?
A little over 2 years, Mr. Amaryl.
Have you ever seen Dahlites there? Short, curly black hair? Big mustaches?
There are students with all kinds of appearances.
But no Dahlites. Look again the next time you're there.
Why not? Said Selden.
They don't like us. We look different. They don't like our mustaches.
You can shave your...
But Selden's voice died under the other's furious glance.
Never. Why should I? My mustache is my manhood.
You shave your beard. That's your manhood, too.
To my people, it is the mustache.
Selden looked at Doris again and murmured, Bald heads, mustaches, madness.
What?
Said Amaryl angrily.
Nothing. Tell me what else they don't like about Dahlites. They make up things not to like. They say we smell. They say we're dirty. They say we steal. They say we're violent. They say we're dumb.
Why do they say all this?
Because it's easy to say it, and it makes them feel good. Sure, if we work in the heat sinks, we get dirty and smelly. If we're poor and held down, some of us steal and get violent. But that isn't the way it is with all of us. How about those tall yellow hairs in the Imperial sector who think they own the galaxy? No, they do own the galaxy. Don't they ever get violent? Don't they steal sometimes? If they did my job, they'd smell the way I do. If they had to live the way I have to, they'd get dirty too.
Who denies that there are people of all kinds in all places? Said Selden.
No one argues the matter. They just take it for granted. Master Selden, I've got to get away from Trantor. I have no chance on Trantor. No way of earning credits. No way of getting an education. No way of becoming a mathematician. No way of becoming anything but what they say I am, a worthless nothing.
This last was said in frustration and desperation. Selden tried to be reasonable. The person I'm renting this room from is a Dalite. He has a clean job. He's educated.
Oh, sure, said Amaryl passionately. There are some. They let a few do it so that they can say it can be done. And those few can live nicely as long as they stay in Dal. Let them go outside and they'll see how they're treated. And while they're in here, they make themselves feel good by treating the rest of us like dirt. That makes them yellow hairs in their own eyes. What did this nice person you're renting this room from say when you told him you were bringing in a heat sinker? What did he say I would be like? They're gone now. Wouldn't be in the same place with me.
Selden moistened his lips. I won't forget you. I'll see to it that you'll get off Trantor and into my own university in Helicon, once I'm back there myself.
Do you promise that, your word of honor, even though I'm a Dalite?
The fact that you're a Dalite is unimportant to me. The fact that you are already a mathematician is. But I still can't quite grasp what you're telling me. I find it impossible to believe that there would be such unreasoning feeling against harmless people. Amaryl said bitterly,
That's because you've never had any occasion to interest yourself in such things. It can all pass right under your nose, and you wouldn't smell a thing, because it doesn't affect you.
Doris said, Mr. Amaryl, Dr. Selden is a mathematician like you. And his head can sometimes be in the clouds. You must understand that. I am a historian, however. I know that it isn't unusual to have one group of people look down upon another group. There are peculiar and almost ritualistic hatreds that have no rational justification and that can have their serious historical influence. It's too bad.
Amaryl said, Saying something is too bad is easy. You say you disapprove, which makes you a nice person, and then you can go about your own business and not be interested anymore. It's a lot worse than too bad. It's against everything decent and natural. We're all of us the same, yellow hairs and black hairs, tall and short, Easterners, Westerners, Southerners, and Outworlders. We're all of us, you and I, and even the Emperor, descended from the people of Earth, aren't we?
Descended from what? Asked Selden. He turned to look at Doris, his eyes wide.
From the people of Earth, shouted Amaryl. The one planet on which human beings originated.
One planet? Just one planet?
The only planet. Sure, Earth.
When you say Earth, you mean Aurora, don't you?
Aurora? What's that? I mean Earth. Have you never heard of Earth?
No,
said Selden. Actually not. It's a mythical world, began Dors, that...
It's not mythical. It was a real planet.
Selden sighed. I've heard this all before. Well, let's go through it again. Is there a Dalite book that tells of Earth?
What?
Some computer software, then.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Young man, where did you hear about Earth?
My dad told me. Everyone knows about it.
Is there anyone who knows about it especially? Did they teach you about it in school?
They never said a word about it there.
Then how do people know about it? Emeril shrugged his shoulders with an air of being uselessly badgered over nothing.
Everyone just does. If you want stories about it, there's Mother Rita. I haven't heard that she's died yet.
Your mother? Wouldn't you know?
She's not my mother. That's just what they call her, Mother Rita. She's an old woman. She lives in Billy Button, or used to.
Where's that?
Down in that direction,
said Emeril, gesturing vaguely. How do I get there?
Get there? You don't want to get there. You'd never come back.
Why not?
Believe me, you don't want to go there.
But I'd like to see Mother Rita. Emeril shook his head.
Can you use a knife?
For what purpose? What kind of knife?
A cutting knife, like this.
Emeril reached down to the belt that held his pants tight about his waist. A section of it came away, and from one end there flashed out a knife blade, thin, gleaming, and deadly. Dor's hand immediately came down hard upon his right wrist. Emeril laughed.
I wasn't planning to use it. I was just showing it to you.
He put the knife back in his belt.
You need one in self-defense, and if you don't have one, or if you have one but don't know how to use it, you'll never get out of Billy Button alive. Anyway...
He suddenly grew very grave and intent.
Are you really serious, Master Selden, about helping me get to Helicon?
Entirely serious. That's a promise. Write down your name and where you can be reached by hypercomputer. You have a code, I suppose.
My shift in the heat sinks has one. Will that do?
Yes.
Well then,
said Emeril, looking up earnestly at Selden.
This means I have my whole future riding on you, Master Selden, so please don't go to Billy Button. I can't afford to lose you now.
He turned beseeching eyes on Dors and said softly,
Mistress Venabile, if he'll listen to you, don't let him go. Please.
Billy Button. Dahl. Oddly enough, the best-known aspect of this sector is Billy Button, a semi-legendary place about which innumerable tales have grown up. In fact, a whole branch of literature now exists in which heroes and adventurers, and victims, must dare the dangers of passing through Billy Button. So stylized have these stories become that the one well-known and presumably authentic tale involving such a passage, that of Harry Selden and Dors Venabile, has come to seem fantastic simply by association. Encyclopedia Galactica. 66. When Harry Selden and Dors Venabile were alone, Dors asked thoughtfully,
Are you really planning to see this mother woman?
I'm thinking about it, Dors.
You're an odd one, Harry. You seem to go steadily from bad to worse. You went upperside, which seemed harmless enough, for a rational purpose when you were in Streeling. Then in Mycogen you broke into the Elder's Aerie, a much more dangerous task, for a much more foolish purpose.
And now in Dal you want to go to this place, which that young man seems to think is simple suicide, for something altogether nonsensical. I'm curious about this reference to Earth, and must know if there's anything to it.
Doris said,
It's a legend, and not even an interesting one. It is routine. The names differ from planet to planet, but the content is the same. There is always the tale of an original world and a golden age. There is a longing for a supposedly simple and virtuous past that is almost universal among the people of a complex and vicious society. In one way or another, this is true of all societies, since everyone imagines his or her own society to be too complex and vicious, however simple it may be. Mark that down for your psychohistory.
Just the same, said Selden, I have to consider the possibility that one world did once exist. Aurora, Earth, the name doesn't matter. In fact, he paused, and finally Doris said,
Well?
Selden shook his head. Do you remember the hand-on-thigh story you told me in Mycogen? It was right after I got the book from Raindrop 43. Well, it popped into my head one evening recently when we were talking to the Tesalvers. I said something that reminded me for an instant.
Reminded you of what?
I don't remember. It came into my head and went out again. But somehow, every time I think of the single world notion, it seems to me I have the tips of my fingers on something, and then lose it.
Doris looked at Selden in surprise.
I don't see what it could be. The hand-on-thigh story has nothing to do with Earth or Aurora.
I know, but this thing that hovers just past the edge of my mind seems to be connected with this single world anyway, and I have the feeling that I must find out more about it at any cost. That, and robots.
Robots, too? I thought the Elders Airy put an end to that.
Not at all. I've been thinking about them. He stared at Doris with a troubled look on his face for a long moment, then said, But I'm not sure.
Sure about what, Harry?
But Selden merely shook his head and said nothing more.
Doris frowned, then said, Harry, let me tell you one thing. In sober history, and believe me, I know what I'm talking about, there is no mention of one world of origin. It's a popular belief, I admit. I don't mean just among the unsophisticated followers of folklore, like the Mycogenians and the Dalite heatsinkers. But there are biologists who insist that there must have been one world of origin, for reasons that are well outside my area of expertise. And there are the more mystical historians who tend to speculate about it. And among the leisure class intellectuals, I understand such speculations are becoming fashionable. Still, scholarly history knows nothing about it.
Selden said, All the more reason, perhaps, to go beyond scholarly history. All I want is a device that will simplify psychohistory for me, and I don't care what the device is, whether it is a mathematical trick, or a historical trick, or something totally imaginary. If the young man we've just talked to had had a little more formal training, I'd have set him on the problem. His thinking is marked by considerable ingenuity and originality.
Doris said, And you're really going to help him then?
Absolutely, just as soon as I'm in a position to.
But ought you to make promises you're not sure you'll be able to keep?
I want to keep it. If you're that stiff about impossible promises, consider that Hummon told Sunmaster 14 that I'd use psychohistory to get the Mycogenians their world back. There's just about zero chance of that. Even if I work out psychohistory, Who knows if it can be used for so narrow and specialized a purpose? There's a real case of promising what one can't deliver. But Doris said with some heat, Cheddar Hummin was trying to save our lives, to keep us out of the hands of Demerzel and the Emperor, don't forget that. And I think he really would like to help the Mycogenians.
And I really would like to help Hugo Emeril, and I am far more likely to be able to help him than I am the Mycogenians. So if you justify the second, please don't criticize the first. What's more, Doors, and his eyes flashed angrily, I really would like to find Mother Rita, and I'm prepared to go alone.
Never, snapped Doors. If you go, I go.
67. Mistress DeSalva returned with her daughter in tow an hour after Emeril had left on his way to his shift. She said nothing at all to either Selden or Doors, but gave a curt nod of her head when they greeted her, and gazed sharply about the room, as though to verify that the heat-sinker had left no trace. She then sniffed the air sharply, and looked at Selden accusingly, before marching through the common room into the family bedroom. DeSalva himself arrived home later, and when Selden and Doris came to the dinner table, DeSalva took advantage of the fact that his wife was still ordering some last-minute details in connection with the dinner, to say in a low voice, Has that person been here? And gone, said Selden solemnly. Your wife was out at the time. DeSalva nodded and said, Will you have to do this again?
I don't think so, said Selden.
Good. Dinner passed largely in silence, but afterward, when the daughter had gone to her room for the dubious pleasures of computer practice, Selden leaned back and said, Tell me about Billy Button.
DeSalva looked astonished, and his mouth moved without any sound issuing. Cassilia, however, was less easily rendered speechless. She said,
Is that where your new friend lives? Are you going to return the visit?
So far, said Selden quietly, I have just asked about Billy Button. Cassilia said sharply,
It is a slum. The dregs live there. No one goes there except the filth that make their homes there.
I understand a Mother Rita lives there.
I never heard of her, said Cassilia, her mouth closing with a snap.
It was quite clear that she had no intention of knowing anyone by name who lived in Billy Button.
DeSalva, casting an uneasy look at his wife, said, I've heard of her. She's a crazy old woman who is supposed to tell fortunes.
And does she live in Billy Button?
I don't know, Master Selden. I've never seen her. She's mentioned sometimes in the news holocasts when she makes her predictions.
Do they come true?
DeSalva snorted.
Do predictions ever come true? Hers don't even make sense.
Does she ever talk about Earth?
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised.
The mention of Earth doesn't puzzle you. Do you know about Earth?
Now DeSalva looked surprised.
Certainly, Master Selden. It's the world all people came from, supposedly.
Supposedly? Don't you believe it?
Me? I'm educated, but many ignorant people believe it.
Are there book films about Earth?
Children's stories sometimes mention Earth. I remember when I was a young boy, my favorite story began, Once, long ago, on Earth, when Earth was the only planet. Remember, Cassilia? You liked it, too.
Cassilia shrugged, unwilling to bend as yet.
I'd like to see it sometime, said Selden. But I mean real book films, learned ones, or films, or printouts.
I never heard of any, but the library.
I'll try that.
Are there any taboos about speaking of Earth?
What are taboos?
I mean, is it a strong custom that people mustn't talk of Earth, or that outsiders mustn't ask about it? Tesalver looked so honestly astonished that there seemed no point in waiting for an answer. Doris put in, Is there some rule about outsiders not going to Belly Button? Now Tesalver turned earnest.
No rule, but it's not a good idea for anyone to go there. I wouldn't.
Doris said, Why not?
It's dangerous, violent. Everyone is armed. I mean, Dahl is an armed place anyway, but in Belly Button they use the weapons. Stay in this neighborhood. It's safe.
So far, said Cecilia darkly, it would be better if we left altogether. Heat sinkers go anywhere these days.
And there was another lowering look in Selden's direction.
Selden said, What do you mean that Dahl is an armed place? There are strong imperial regulations against weapons.
I know that, said Tesalver. And there are no stun guns here, or percussives, or psychic probes, or anything like that. But there are knives.
He looked embarrassed.
Doris said, Do you carry a knife, Tesalver?
Me?
He looked genuinely horrified.
I am a man of peace, and this is a safe neighborhood.
We have a couple of them in the house, said Cecilia, sniffing again. We're not that certain this is a safe neighborhood.
Does everyone carry knives? Asked Doris.
Almost everyone, Mistress Fanabile, said Tesalver. It's customary. But that doesn't mean everyone uses them.
But they use them in Belly Button, I suppose, said Doris.
Sometimes. When they're excited, they have fights.
And the government permits it? The Imperial government, I mean?
Sometimes they try to clean Belly Button up, but knives are too easy to hide, and the custom is too strong. Besides, it's almost always Dahlites that get killed, and I don't think the Imperial government gets too upset over that.
What if it's an outsider who gets killed?
If it's reported, the Imperials could get excited. But what happens is that no one has seen anything, and no one knows anything. The Imperials sometimes round up people on general principles, but they can never prove anything. I suppose they decide it's the outsider's fault for being there. So don't go to Belly Button, even if you have a knife.
Selden shook his head rather pettishly. I wouldn't carry a knife. I don't know how to use one, not skillfully.
Then it's simple, Master Selden. Stay out.
Tesalver shook his head portentously.
Just stay out.
I may not be able to do that either, said Selden. Doris glared at him, clearly annoyed, and said to Tesalver,
Where does one buy a knife? Or may we have one of yours?
Cecilia said quickly,
No one takes someone else's knife. You must buy your own.
Tesalver said, There are knife stores all over. There aren't supposed to be. Theoretically, they're illegal, you know.
Any appliance store sells them, however. If you see a washing machine on display, that's a sure sign.
And how does one get to Belly Button? Asked Selden.
By expressway.
Tesalver looked dubious as he looked at Doris' frowning expression. Selden said, And once I reach the expressway?
Get on the eastbound side and watch for the signs. But if you must go, Master Selden,
Tesalver hesitated, then said,
You mustn't take Mistress Fanabile. Women sometimes are treated worse.
She won't go, said Selden. I'm afraid she will, said Doris with quiet determination.
68. The appliance store dealer's mustache was clearly as lush as it had been in his younger days, but it was grizzled now, even though the hair on his head was still black. He touched the mustache out of sheer habit as he gazed at Doris and brushed it back on each side. He said, "You're not a Dollite."
"Yes, but I still want a knife."
He said, "It's against the law to sell knives." Doris said, "I'm not a policewoman or a government agent of any sort. I'm going to Billy Button." He stared at her thoughtfully. "Alone?"
"With my friend."
She jerked her thumb over her shoulder in the direction of Selden, who was waiting outside sullenly. "You're buying it for him?" He stared at Selden, and it didn't take him long to decide. "He's an outsider, too. Let him come in and buy it for himself."
"He's not a government agent either, and I'm buying it for myself."
The dealer shook his head. "Outsiders are crazy. But if you want to spend some credits, I'll take them from you." He reached under the counter, brought out a stub, turned it with a slight and expert motion, and the knife blade emerged.
"Is that the largest you have?"
"Best woman's knife made."
"Show me a man's knife."
"You don't want one that's too heavy. Do you know how to use one of these things?"
"I'll learn, and I'm not worried about heavy. Show me a man's knife."
The dealer smiled. "Well, if you want to see one." He moved farther down the counter and brought up a much fatter stub. He gave it a twist, and what appeared to be a butcher's knife emerged. He handed it to her, handle first, still smiling. She said,
"Show me that twist of yours."
He showed her on a second knife, slowly twisting one way to make the blade appear, then the other way to make it disappear. "Twist and squeeze," he said.
"Do it again, sir."
The dealer obliged. Doris said,
"All right, close it and toss me the haft."
He did, in a slow upward loop. She caught it, handed it back, and said,
"Faster."
He raised his eyebrows, and then, without warning, backhanded it to her left side. She made no attempt to bring over her right hand, but caught it with her left, and the blade showed tumescently at once, then disappeared. The dealer's mouth fell open.
"And this is the largest you have?" she said.
"It is. If you try to use it, it will just tire you out."
"I'll breathe deeply. I'll take a second one, too."
"For your friend?"
"No, for me."
"You plan on using two knives?"
"I've got two hands."